Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Monday, January 15th, 2024, Martin Luther King Jr. Day 2024, 14 minutes past the hour, -1 degree below zero here in the Marion area. Phone lines are open, 740-751-4038. That's 740-751-4038. The questions this morning we've been talking about, or the topics, I should say, we've been talking about this morning. Miss America happened last night. Most people don't seem to know that. I think it did used to happen in September, but it did happen. Of special interest to us here because of Marilyn Meskey and Madison Marsh, Miss Colorado was crowned the 2024 Miss America. First active Air Force officer ever to be crowned Miss America. Now, the question is, in regard to Miss America, they call it a scholarship pageant now, and they've changed the name of the swimsuit competition to the fitness competition. Is this still a competition that relies heavy on looks? Miss Colorado wins. Texas is the first runner-up. Indiana, hey, a bordering state, second runner-up. Third runner-up, Kentucky. And fourth runner-up, Rhode Island. Kentucky, another bordering state there, so the Midwest did very well. Two in the top five, hey, that's not bad. But could somebody who was overweight, could somebody who didn't look the greatest, could they be Miss America? I don't know. Hasn't happened yet, but here's hoping. 740-751-4038. And, of course, it is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Holiday here in the United States, federal holiday. The I Have a Dream speech with Martin Luther King Jr. was first spoken, performed in August of 1963, over 60 years ago now. Do you think today that Martin Luther King Jr. would be happy with the progress that was made? We talked about this on the Friday night show last week, and Matt and Carrington felt that, yes, some progress had been made, and some had not. And I guess I would probably fall into that category as well. I certainly think some things are better, some things are probably not better, and are we ever going to get to that point? So there's that topic. And we can always talk about the weather. -1. And looks like it's pretty well going to be that way all week this week. We might get up into the 20s in the afternoons, but boy, oh boy, the mornings are looking rough the entire week and really into the weekend. So I guess that's the way it's going to be. 740-751-4038, 17 minutes past the hour here. Give us a buzz if there's anything on your mind, 740-751-4038. Now, because we've been consistent with this, and because on Friday we had City Councilman Jason Schauber on, I think we probably should talk a little bit about this here this morning and open up the phone lines. Last week was a whirlwind week. We had Marion City Auditor Miranda McGinnis on Tuesday, and she kind of told her story for the first time about what had happened. How she was offered the transit job here in Marion, why she ended up not taking the transit job, why she's going to stay in the position she's in as Marion auditor, and also claim that some other people were in on these meetings than what we thought. A lot of people thought it was just Bill Collins and Mark Russell, the law director, and herself. Well, we learned that maybe Mayor Schertzer was in on one of these meetings. Jason Schauber was in on some of these meetings. Some of her staff was in on some of these meetings. Well, Friday, Jason came in and talked about this, and I give him a lot of credit for doing that, because it's, you know, it's interesting to come in and talk about something like that. And we learned a lot of interesting things from Jason on Friday morning, a two-hour live interview with City Councilman Jason Schauber, in which he really talked about the fact that he felt that his interview was hijacked. Well, let's go to the phones here. We'll come back to this. Go ahead, caller.
Scott Spears has a dream today.
I certainly do. I'm not sure what it is yet, but I dream we get over 5 degrees.
Yeah, that's a mutual dream, my friend.
Looking rough this week.
Oh, isn't it though?
Oh, it's going to be a rough one.
It makes you, I don't know, I get really down on living here when we get these polar vortexes come down. I'm like, well, why do I subject myself to this?
You know what's interesting? It is, and it's not, I don't think it's a depression, but it's hard to get out of bed when it's still dark and you know it's negative degrees outside and do something. That's just not, it doesn't give you any energy.
And then depending on where you live, I live in a wind tunnel here in the wilds east of Caledonia, and it's really rough. I mean, that wind just comes across the field and slams into you. And like you said, it's dark and bitterly cold, and yeah, it makes it rough.
It certainly does, and I think a lot of people who do suffer with depression and things of that nature, I think these are the worst months for them. I think once we get past the holidays, January, February, and March can be very difficult.
Yes, for sure, and I get it, 100%, I do. But yeah, I was wanting just to have a chat about Martin Luther King.
Don't go right ahead.
You know, I think that if the goal was racial harmony and equality of opportunity, I think that we have failed miserably. And if his ultimate purpose was to encourage a system based on meritocracy, where you could rise or fall based on whatever your abilities were as an individual, and that you would achieve racial harmony because everybody would have an equal chance. The law wasn't going to put anything in the way to prevent people from achieving whatever they may. That they've done a complete 180 on that through policies like affirmative action, like quotas, things that look at somebody based on their identity in a particular group. And I think that that's doing a disservice to Martin Luther King to push, and that has extended here recently. You hear the term equity. So equity is equality of outcome, not equality of opportunity. And that's dangerous, because if you say equality of outcome, then you're saying everybody needs to end up at the same place. And as you know, as we've talked before, Scott, individuals are not all equal. You know, like I said, I would never be a good runner. I have other skills and abilities. And the same with you, the same with everybody. So we want to make sure that everybody has an equal opportunity, and there's no laws or anything that's going to prevent them from achieving. Now that, you know, but we don't want to say that everybody has to end up in the same place. And I think as far as identity politics and that sort of thing, they've just accelerated, and now they, you know, really focus on what tribe do you belong to? And that's playing on people's inherent, you know, over thousands of years of developing all across the globe. I mean, we develop tribal tendencies. And some of those tendencies are stronger in certain groups than others, and pushed by the media, pushed by the government in order to divide and use one against the other. So I think if we went back to, you know, meritocracy and saying everybody should be treated fairly and be given the quality of opportunity, then I think that we would be closer to fulfilling what Martin Luther King had wanted.
Well, you know, and the thing that comes off of this to me is that it in 2024, or at least 2023, I can't say that maybe it's happened in the last 15 days, but in certainly recent times, certainly in the last year, it's interesting to me how you get both extremes when it comes to racism, because this is a thing in America. You will hear people say that racism has prevented this, 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 and this, and you might agree with some of that, but you don't necessarily agree with all of it, and then you'll hear the other side, which says it absolutely does not exist anymore, that's not a thing, it's not going on. And I don't really know how either one of those things can be true. So I just kind of sit in the middle and say I'm not really sure how anybody can make definitive claims one way or another.
If it was a racist country, then you would have institutional preferences for the preferred group. So if that were white people, then there would be institutional preferences where if you apply and you're white, you get extra points, i.e. affirmative action based on identity. You know, there'd be structural and institutional evidence of that. There's the exact opposite. That's the thing. Like, when you have quotas and you have affirmative action and you have these other preference systems in place, that does not say that it's racist in that way. But is it based on identity? Are our institutions based on identity? Yeah, they are. They are. They 100% are, instead of being on meritocracy.
You know what's interesting? I'll tell you what's interesting about that, because I know a lot of people do bring up the quotas and things like that, affirmative action. But what's fascinating to me is when we're left up to our own devices, and I certainly think elections would be considered our own devices. In the history of the United States, in the history of Ohio, in the history of Marion, Ohio, I always think it's very fascinating that here we are, where certainly the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act have been in place for 60 years. Women have had the right to vote for over 100 years. And yet we've never had a woman president, never had a woman governor, never had a woman mayor in Marion history. And when it comes to African Americans, black people, we've had one black president, we've had no black governors, we've had no black mayors in the city of Marion. Now, these are things based on the popular vote. So left up to our own devices, and I would just, I mean, we're getting to the point now where it's 60 years, 100 years, over 100 years. You would think just somewhere along the line that somebody would have stumbled in there, because people say, well, they're not qualified, they're not running, they're not... Well, you would think at some point somebody would have been qualified, somebody would have ran. And whether you like Nan Whaley or not, and she was obviously of the Democratic Party, she was the first woman ever to get the nomination of a major party in Ohio and got less votes than anybody else on the Democratic ticket. And I don't know. There's just something to that.
Well, I mean, if you look at voting statistics as far as split between Republican and Democrat by race. I think white people, it's about 50-50 roughly. I think African-American or black, I think it's about 90% vote Democrat and about 10% vote Republican. I think Asians are like 80% Democrat, 20% Republican. And then I think Hispanics are, I think, 70% Democrat, roughly, over the last 20 years, and 30% Republican. So, you know, you're also drawing from those populations. So if you say, like, a city, I mean, nationally, black people are, I think, 12%, maybe 13%, according to the last census, of the U.S. population. So there's those demographics and, you know, in play as well, as far as the likelihood that you're going to have a national candidate that, you know, but I don't disagree that people do act tribally. Humans are tribal, and that goes along with, you know, being separated for tens of thousands of years in development and developing different culture. Those things do matter. I mean, even between nations within different continents and stuff. You know, that's why Germans are different than French, or Ugandans are different than Rwandans, or they developed over thousands of years, unique cultures, and you know, different value systems. They may have shared histories and intermixed and stuff over those years, but there are tribal preferences, and that's clear across the globe. I mean, if you name, for me, a country that has successfully, I guess, integrated and made everybody completely equal from different groups, that hasn't had a history of division and war and other similar things, yeah, I would challenge people to say that. I mean, I think this country, for as diverse and unique as we are, we have managed it pretty well. Other countries that have had those, I mean, like I said, Uganda, Rwanda, the Balkans, different parts of the former Soviet Union. You know, you look in the Middle East, you know, even right now, if you have different groups, a lot of times they start fighting each other and different atrocities and stuff. So,
It certainly is the case, but you know, it's weird that we're having this conversation about Miss America this morning as well, because in a way, there's something to that as well. Now, obviously, that's a competition that is still female-based. No males in that. It's Miss America. But now they've changed it to a scholarship pageant. Now it's a fitness competition. It's not a swimsuit competition. And yet, I don't know that somebody who was heavy, I don't know that somebody who was not the best looking, I don't know that somebody who didn't fit that particular mold would have the same chance to get this scholarship, which is a big scholarship and still a big honor. I mean, clearly the national news still covers it. You know, there's division there. I mean, I think that certainly somebody who is looking a certain way has a better chance of being hired. I think statistics have proven that. Maybe not the most qualified person, but we like to look at it. You know, social media has certainly played a part in this. We love when people take their selfies, and I think this is more of a woman thing than a man thing, because I just don't see it happening with men. But the people, oh, you're so beautiful, oh, you're so good, you look so great, blah, 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 blah. I mean, why is the affirmation from these strangers important to people, and what is really Miss America all about? Certainly the ratings have gone down, and most people didn't even know what happened last night.
Well, I think that there's nothing wrong with, we used to have a culture that valued, I guess, ideal standards of beauty. Now, whether or not, now I'm not saying just women, but also men, just everybody, and that was, you know, not obtainable for a lot of people, because you're born what you are, and there's really not a whole lot that you can do. You can have good hygiene and dress well and take care of yourself, but, you know, certain things like height standards and bone structure and, you know, all kind of different things. Symmetry, I mean, that's the essence of what we find as humans to be attractive, is typically symmetry. But then you got rid of that, and you replaced it, you know, with saying that it wasn't about physical beauty. Well, there's nothing wrong with recognizing that and saying, like, oh, this individual is physically attractive, and then they've always had other components in there like talent show and different things like that, but I don't think that there's anything wrong with recognizing that in somebody, but then again, it also puts on, I guess, objective beauty standards to say this is what we view as being physically beautiful, And I think that's the problem, is that people want to say that, oh, there's not, there isn't an objective standard or a universal standard. It varies from individual to individual based on their unique background or circumstances or attributes. And that's kind of a unique development, because, you know, they kind of did the same thing with art, in my opinion. A lot of this postmodern art, where somebody just that has been deemed to be famous or whatever, given a pedestal for whatever reason, they slap on a single streak of red paint on a white canvas, and that is heralded as being the most remarkable piece of art and sells for millions of dollars. Meanwhile, you have the Dutch masters and the realist painters who clearly show their mastery of their craft, and that is not heralded as being all that remarkable. So I think they've done it in other fields. It's just now being applied to the Miss America pageant and other beauty contests.
You know what's fascinating? Yeah, I said earlier in the program, I was having this conversation with a student. Well, I guess he's a teacher now, who just graduated in December and had done his student teaching here in Marion last fall. And he had talked about how the schools that he had went into, now the male teachers were dressed fine. You know, it was polo shirts and sometimes shirt and tie and khakis or sometimes jeans, whatever it was. But they were not dressed inappropriately by any stretch of the imagination. But it was more of the female teachers who now were wearing the leggings and the shirts that you could see things, tighter clothes, so on and so forth, that you would not have seen years ago. And I don't even know if there's a dress code. And he was kind of uncomfortable with this for the children. And I don't even know if people think about it anymore. And it's also kind of interesting to me that a lot of times people will try to guess your age. You know, how old are you? And if you don't tell them right off the bat, they'll guess your age. Well, the things you can do above the neck now are pretty amazing. I mean, you can dye your hair. You can get Botox. I mean, I know people in Marion who get Botox. You can do the fake tans. You can do a lot of things to make the upper part of your body look a lot younger than it actually is. But it is interesting, people's hands, you cannot really disguise the hands.
No, you can't. But I think what you and I, being born post-cultural revolution, you know, we don't really understand it, or we don't have that personal connection to it. But just think, if you were a young adult in the 1940s, 1950s, and then fast forward to the late 60s or the early 70s, the complete change that occurred from a cultural standpoint, I mean, it was the cultural revolution in this country and across the globe. You know, back in the 40s and 50s and before, for time immemorial, you know, when you went to church, you wore your best. When you went to any public event, look at baseball games from that era. You know, you have the men wearing a fedora and a suit and tie, or a dress shirt and, you know, look nice. Women wearing hats, depending on the fashion of the particular day, and dresses. And, you know, people looked nice because that was the cultural expectation, and objectively, as a society, we have said this is what we value, and we want people to try to look their best when they're out in public. And now, because we have no objective standard, you can do whatever you want. And if you want to, you know, wear a potato sack and have tattoos all over your body and have those big things in your earlobes and dye your hair and whatever, you do you. And I struggle because I appreciate the freedom of that, but I also recognize, like, the potential for it to degrade even further over time to where we have no standards at all anymore.
You're certainly not going to win Miss America dressed like that. And I want to mention Mary, who's out there listening. She just sent us a message. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And I think that's true. And I think it goes to something you called in on Friday night. And I found this fascinating because I think the question was, do you believe in true love? Now, we had a diverse group there. We had men and women Friday night, Carrington being the woman, Matt and I being the men. You had a diverse age group there. We had Matt 20, Carrington 22, me over 22. And it was interesting that everybody said no. Everybody said no. Now, I found that fascinating because I still think there are people who believe that. You know, those sayings that we've made fun of so often on here, never met anybody like you before, you're the one, blah, 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 blah. And I think a lot of that is based in looks, because the older you get, when you find somebody who still looks good to you, the pool is smaller. A lot of people are married. A lot of people are doing other things. And you think, well, I better jump on that person, because obviously looks are the first thing you know about somebody. What else do you know about them? You don't know anything. So I think that drives a lot of this, oh, I'm in love. This is the unlike anybody I've ever met before. Looks and money. And you know what? In the end, that just doesn't pay off. You know, if you are willing to be with somebody in a cardboard box, and you really have to think about that, then that might be somebody you want to be around. But if you're not, if one of the main facts are the places you are going and the trips you're taking and the things you're doing, and the fact that you're able to have a little money in your pocket, well, I think you're probably more in love with that than probably the other person. Now, that's just my opinion.
Well, prior to maybe the last 100 years, what did men, on the whole, look for in a woman? And what did women look for in a man?
In the last 100 years?
Yeah, prior to the last 100 years. So leading up, and it, you know, all that cultural change and everything that happened in the 60s, you know, I'm saying before that, what did men and women look for in the opposite sex or in a partner?
Well, I think there were a lot of things that we don't look for anymore.
I think that women historically have been attracted to somebody who is a good provider and, you know, that is going to be able to bring home the bacon. Men look for somebody who would be a good nurturer and take care of the family. They also, depending now, if you had somebody who was, you know, wealthy and had the ability to be more selective, you know, then you're going to, on top of those characteristics, you may select for things like beauty or looks or whatever, but it was more of a practical. It was, you know, those practical considerations as opposed to, you know, romance.
You know what? It just always, you know, anytime, and we live in the world of social media now, anytime somebody comments on their significant other's looks in public. Now, I mean, obviously you might do that in private, and I don't think there's anything wrong with saying you look good today or whatever in private. But when you go to the length to do that so other people can see that, now to me, that's showing off, because you're not doing that for the other person, because you could turn around and tell them. You're seeing them every day. Why are you telling us all that? Now, to me, it's basically, look what I got that you don't. And I that's bad, because that is so superficial and so I just have no idea. I've never written a post like that in my life. Now, I've complimented people on being a good mother. I've complimented people on being a caring person, being a generous person with their time, not their money. having fun with them, just good times with them, but not on this superficiality or certainly on their finances. I mean, what in the world is that going to get you in the long run? And I also think people don't really understand that people, if you are over and over and over and over and over in relationships or marriages or whatever it is, I really think somebody should pump the brakes with you and say, well, now wait a second, why is it working with me but it didn't work with the last 12 people? I mean, shouldn't you ask that question at some point?
Yeah, definitely. I think you should, but people don't. They lack that insight, and how many, I said, out of your total pool of connections on social media, how many of those regularly publish unique, insightful, creative things that they themselves created?
Oh, few. And that's what I think one of the major problems. Now, I don't have a problem with you complimenting your kid. I don't have a problem with you being proud of your kid. I think that's something you would want to share with other people. I don't have a problem with you promoting something you're doing, an event or a show or you want people to know that you're doing that. Why wouldn't you? And if you're doing videos of something creative, I can see that. But thanking somebody, showing me what your spouse looks like, showing me what you look like daily, what is that? What's the creativity in that?
There's not. But I think that a lot of people just go through life, and I don't think it's their fault. I think that they are conditioned by our society and culture to be that way from the day that they're born, not to ask questions, not to be inquisitive, not to try to create. They go along with the flow of society and culture, which is very superficial and really not a whole lot of substance. But I see that. And I think if you look at the studies, something like 90% of all social media posts are created by something like 10 or 15% of the overall user base. So what does that tell you, Scott? You've got a lot of just spectators on there.
Well, that's it. And I think it's just very interesting to me because I think people really don't pay attention to all the problems that are behind maybe that pretty face, all the problems that are maybe behind that that personality that maybe you're not getting the full breadth of. I mean, and it goes both ways. It's not just a one-way street. I mean, let's be honest. If you're two people in your 40s, okay, let's say you're 40s. That's midway. If you're two people in your 40s and neither one of you are in anything at that point, both of you are single. Now, I'm guessing you've either had marriages or relationships or something along the way. Now, shouldn't you both be saying, now, wait a second, why are you single at 40, whatever? And sometimes there are legitimate reasons. You know, I want to be. I never wanted to get married. I never wanted to have kids. I didn't want to do that, and that's the reason. I'm a busy person. But sometimes these answers are a little shaky, but nobody seems to ask them because in the moment, they think they have found the one, as they say.
Yeah, and that's probably the only post that they actually came up with. Am I right in that?
Oh, yeah. Something? Well, and I'm sure at the time you think that's the one, but I would guess if you went back and looked at your other post, you were probably saying nice things about the other 12 people you've been involved with in your life as well.
But I guess my question or my comment would be, the ones that are doing that, however regularly, are they creating anything else, or is that literally it? So that is their creativity too. So not only do they expect to get the instant gratification from that life decision by engaging in that relationship. However, like I said, however many times that has happened over the recent years, but it's probably the only thing that they really ever post about or create, other than sharing certain other, you know, or maybe taking a picture of what they're eating. There's no thought, or there's no real substance in anything else that they're, from a creative standpoint, or like an independent thought or anything like that. So they just go with those skin level things, like, oh, look at how beautiful I am, or look at my spouse, or whatever.
Look at how happy we are. Did you hear the James Anderson interview last week?
I didn't have an opportunity to listen to that segment. No, I didn't.
Okay. Well, he said something very interesting to me in that interview, and he was on, for people who did and did not hear it, talking about taking radiation for his cancer, his thyroid cancer. And at one point during that interview, he had talked about last week going in for that treatment because he had to isolate. And his wife had gotten him a T-shirt that he was radioactive, and it kind of made him laugh and smile and that sort of thing. And he talked about the importance of having her there, and that she's been there with him through this entire thing, and that if she had not been there, it would have been much harder. And I reflected back on, and I'm not going to say the person because I don't want to out the name, and actually the person has since went on to their reward, and I don't want to out the significant other, but they were married, and the husband left. Now, I don't know the circumstances. I just know that he left during the cancer, and that can happen a lot. And James and I talked about when somebody gets sick because they're not as active anymore, they're not as fun anymore, they can't do the things they once did, even if it's temporary, you will see a lot of relationships hit the skids when somebody is not feeling well. Health is a big thing in that. And certainly the other person I don't think is choosing to be ill, and so they get resentful about it.
More in sickness or in health, right?
Well, yeah, good luck for that. Good luck with that. But you know what? I give James Anderson's wife a lot of credit in that, because he said, you know, that she's put up with all this. She's put up with my moods. She's put up with my time when I've cried and the time when I've laughed and my paranoia and my worry and all these things that she's had to put up with. You know, that is, you can say you're a caring person and you can say you're a nice person, but that's when the rubber meets the road right there. If you can sustain that, then I have a lot of respect for you. People who walk out during that, like the person who I saw walk out, and again, I'm not in their personal life, but when that person walked out during that time, I just thought, you know, this is not the right time. Even if it has nothing to do with that, you're really kind of a schmeal here.
Well, we've made it very, very easy for people to part ways and get divorced. I mean, again, you're going to have positives and negatives. There definitely are trade-offs, you know, doing it one way or the other. But, you know, if you peruse old newspapers, and I do a lot of local history, genealogy, that sort of thing, and there was a local couple over here, and I think it was 1908 or 1910, and they got a divorce. It was front page of the Marion papers, and this was just a farmer. I mean, now they had a large family, you know, that sort of thing. But fast forward to today, with no fault divorce and no questions asked. And what is it with the failure rate of marriages in America? I think within 5 years is something like 50%. Isn't it about that, Scott, if I recall the
statistic? Yeah, it's high, yeah.
Within 5 years of marriage, like half of them will be divorced in this country. So in a matter of 100 years, we went from it being so rare that it made front page news. Front page! To now, more than half of them are divorced within the first 5 years.
Well, like I say, my feeling on that whole thing is I believe if you have been married three or more times, I think much like firearms, I think there should be a cooling off period after you apply for the marriage license. Because clearly you've had your shot at this and something is not working properly. I think you need 6 months to go think about this and get some counseling before you try this again. But I want to get this in. You heard Jason Schaber on Friday. What did you make of that whole... We kept saying, well, one of these people needs to talk. One of them needs to talk. He talked.
He talked. And he repeated some of my commentary. So
he's a listener, too.
I like all these people that admit that, like, I'm adding good topics to the conversation. And that made me feel good.
And you got to love that they're listening.
Yeah, no, people are listening. I mean, especially the people within that sphere of local politics, because it's you, man. I mean, tell me somebody else out there that is asking the questions, and there really aren't. So, like I said, keep it up. No matter what people try to say, you know, well, let's talk about the weather or whatever. We need this in this town and in this area, people shining the spotlight, asking the questions, and I think that Jason coming on there was what he needed to do, so it was, I think, beneficial, you know, to him and then to the topic. What was the reason for not saying that in the prior interviews that there had been those discussions? Was it just to keep it quiet? Was that what it was?
Well, you know, I don't think... you have to go back in time, and it's an interesting thing, because at the time, Miranda had not talked, and Bill certainly had not talked, so the idea of who was in these meetings was all always, we don't really know. We don't even know if the law director was there. We don't know how many meetings happened. We don't know how this came about. And I think when Jason came in previously, he talked about, you know, not wanting to know the interviews, but the whole story of how they happened, you know, I mean, he talked about just the first meeting with her. He just wanted to talk about the money. And where are we headed from here? And Bill Collins shows up at that meeting, and he didn't even know he was going to be there. So I think that probably didn't seem significant to Jason at the time. Now, clearly we all knew she was offered the transit position, and apparently Jason and Mayor Schertzer were there when they asked if the deal was still good. But I didn't get the impression that either one of them was there when the deal was offered. So there's something missing there between the initial conversation about how are you going to fix this office and is the deal still good. Something happened between November 30th and December 11th that I don't think Jason Schaber was present at. But I did find it interesting that when we played the clip of Miranda talking about the meeting with Bill 2 weeks ago, prior to her rescinding her resignation after January 1st, he seemed very bothered by that Bill went in and said, are you still good for this? Miranda said, I'm not sure anymore. I've talked to people. And Bill's saying, these people don't have your best interest at heart. Think about your family. Think about your kids. Think about your house. And maybe this job's not on the table anymore. I think, and the law director was not present at that meeting, and I think... that bothered Jason.
Well, I mean, like I said, it should. You have to create a culture. You talk about cultural change. You have to create a culture of transparency, accountability, and public awareness and involvement with the community if you're going to do good things in the future and fix the problems in the present. So this is I think there was a little bit of conversation like, oh, well, what do we do? You know, if this went down, you know, do we really make a big stink about this? Well, you know, if there was impropriety, and that goes across the board, no matter who it is, what it is, there needs to be that culture of accountability and excellence and us demanding it, the people demanding it.
Well, I would say no city council meeting tonight because of Martin Luther King Day, but I would guess next city council meeting a week from tonight that city council will be asking Bill Collins some questions, which has not happened in regard to this, and that'll be a very interesting meeting where he takes that, what their follow-up is, and where we go from here.
Do you think he will end up being involved in, I guess, the community, you know, journalist activities? I mean, do you think that he will change that from not?
I would hope, but I don't know. He always was when he was the police chief and deputy sheriff. I don't know what has happened, so I hope so.
Yeah, it's just I don't get it. I would get your story out there. So hopefully he will.
Well, we're running out of time, but he's got a week. Maybe we'll hear from him in the next week.
All right.
Hey, thanks for calling.
Bird dog him, Scott.
Hey, thanks for calling.
All right, have a good one.
All right. Well, hey, we're up to 1 degree. Isn't that something? Have a great Martin Luther King Jr. Day. This is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
You're listening to The Place for the Best Guests and Talk. From Joey Diore at WGN's Bozo the Clown.
Before we wrap up, I'll ask, and you can or can't, can you do something in the Bozo voice for those people?
You know, the funny thing is, and as I mentioned before, my voice and Bozo's pretty much ended up sounding the same.